This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Egypt Air Flight 804 is missing. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Kashenka, on this Thursday, May 19th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Search efforts are underway in the Mediterranean Sea for an Airbus A320 that was en route from Paris to Cairo. It vanished from radar early this morning with 66 people on board.
On the campaign trail, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has released a list of people he'd consider for the Supreme Court.
From Washington, the House has approved $622 million in funding for the Zika virus, a fraction of what President Obama wants.
And after Facebook tried to convince conservatives yesterday that it's not intentionally promoting liberal stories, here's a follow-up. What if Facebook had a button that simply offered stories with opposing viewpoints?
That news feed is the place where 40% of Americans now get political news, particularly actually focused on the liberal side of the equation. And that news feed is just like that trending news list at the top. It's a product of humans.
Wall Street Journal tech writer Jeffrey Fowler suggests how Facebook could go from being part of the problem to part of the solution. He's here in about 25 minutes. An Egypt Air flight with 66 people on board, en route from Paris to Cairo, has gone missing this morning over the Mediterranean Sea. Officials with Egypt's national airline told Reuters they believe the Airbus A320 probably crashed into the sea. The Egyptian and Greek militaries scrambled aircraft and boats to search for Flight 804, which departed the French capital shortly after 11 last night. Kathleen Bangs is a former commercial pilot and aviation journalist.
What we have is an Airbus A320 involved in an accident, but that's not suspicious surface because there's thousands of these in operation. It's one of the most popular jets that the airlines use across the world.
Among those aboard the flight were 30 Egyptians and 15 French nationals, along with passengers from at least 8 other countries. Egypt Air said the plane, which was traveling at an altitude of 37,000 feet, vanished in Egyptian airspace at 2:30 a.m. local time, about 165 miles off the Egyptian coastline. It was due to land about 45 minutes later. The airline tweeted that the military had received a distress signal from the plane's emergency devices. There were no reported weather issues at the time. Well, what possibly could have happened here? We're joined now by aviation consultant Ken Jenkins, a professional emergency manager who's responded to crises like this before. He's based in Dallas. Ken, cruising at 37,000 feet, don't most incidents happen during takeoff and landing?
Cruise phase of flight is the safest part of flight. However, in the last few years, there have been a few incidents where things have gone awry during the cruise part of the flight, most notably Air France Flight 447, which crashed a few years ago. But right now, at this point, there isn't anything that indicates there was anything wrong. Weather doesn't seem to be an issue. As I'd mentioned, the crew had not called in, the cockpit crew had not radioed in that there was anything wrong with the aircraft, and there was even that transition between airspace into Egyptian airspace from French airspace, and everything seemed normal then. So something either happened, catastrophic failure to the aircraft or possible terrorism.
I think that's something that's on everybody's mind these days. What about the potential of terrorism here?
Well, it's certainly a possibility, considering the region where the flight was flying. It's not a known region for like we had seen with the Ukraine incident with MH flight, Malaysia Airlines flight 17. I'm really just kind of shaking my head. There's just so many things going on right now with this that there's really no way to tell which possibility it is. Catastrophic failure with the aircraft or if the plane was possibly shot down. Once the wreckage is found, of course, that they'll certainly find telltale signs in what may have happened with it.
We're speaking live this morning with aviation consultant Ken Jenkins, a professional emergency manager who's based in Dallas. Give us an idea, Ken, of what it's like at these crisis centers right now in Paris and Cairo.
So what you'll typically see from an airline standpoint, and this would be any major carrier, and for the most part, it's their standard operating procedures, is they're going to set up, of course, their EOC, or Emergency Operations Center, for the airline, and then an airport will actually open up its EOC as well. And the first thing that they want to do from a family member perspective is get a friends and relatives center set up for privacy purposes, and that's for family members that are coming and friends to pick up their loved one from a flight. They take them into a room where there's privacy. They have food, beverages. They're briefed about updates as to what's going on so that they hear that information first versus via social media or on the radio news or TV news. And then subsequent to that, the airline is actually readying its team to send family members, team members, to go help the families, but they're also getting their emergency response team set up. So they're checking maintenance records. They're looking at the flight records of the aircraft. They're checking the training records of each of the pilots, the flight attendants. They're going through the manifest and looking for any abnormalities in the manifest or anything that might suspect, you know, was there a suspected terrorist on board? So there are a whole host of activities that are going on the airline side at this point.
How difficult, though, is it in this type of situation to gather and disseminate information?
It's very challenging, particularly in today's 24-hour news cycle. There's so much information coming in and coming out that the airline really does its best to only speak to what they know to be factual. So it's been very interesting through the course of the evening and early morning hours to watch Egypt Air actually tweet out information so that they can stay on top of it. And for that, I applaud them. The only thing that I would be skeptical about from that perspective is, did they share that with family members that were at the airport first? Because they'd want to hear that before they saw it on Twitter, for example. So they'll do their best to vet the information to make sure it's accurate, or they wouldn't say anything at all.
What do you even say to family members if you're a grief counselor at this point?
Well, and you know, that's such a hard thing because everybody's different in terms of how they grieve. Mm. But the one thing that is consistent, I think, among cultures is information is paramount. And the things that you say are, what a challenging situation, of course, how difficult this must be. But the most important thing is to be transparent, show empathy, be compassionate, but provide the information. It's the number one thing that research shows that people want in situations like this, is to get the information from the airline that has the information and from the manufacturer of the aircraft that they have information about what might have happened, that the families get that information first. It's paramount. It's the number one thing.
Thanks, Ken. Ken Jenkins, professional emergency manager, and also aviation consultants. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal.
A great business needs a stunning website. And with Wix.com, you can do it all by yourself. Wix.com makes it easy to look amazing online, no matter what type of business you're in. Show off your images in a beautiful gallery. Grow your contact list and get all your social media in one place, just the way you want. Your customers are going to love it. So, what are you waiting for? Show the world what you can do. Go to Wix.com and create your stunning website today. It's easy and free.
Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. We're getting a feel for what the Supreme Court might look like under a Trump administration. Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, has released a list of 11 potential Supreme Court nominees he would appoint if elected. The list is meant to reassure conservatives that his picks would be in line with their positions. Top picks include conservative federal and state judges like Stephen Colleton of Iowa and Raymond Grunder of Missouri. Mr. Trump was on the Fox News channel to promote the list.
I want high intellect. I want great intellect. These people are all of very high intellect. They're pro-life.
Also on the list are William Pryor of Alabama and Diane Sykes of Wisconsin, two people he had previously named. The news comes as the New York businessman is working to bring together a fractured Republican Party and earn the trust of still skeptical establishment Republicans who question his electability in the general election, as well as conservatives still wary of his commitment to their cause. The House has approved a measure that would provide $622 million to battle the Zika virus, about a third of what the White House requested and below what the Senate has approved. President Obama has threatened to veto the House bill, saying it was woefully inadequate. The White House has requested $1.9 billion. Unlike the Senate legislation, the House bill that gained approval yesterday requires that the $622 million be fully offset with spending cuts elsewhere. California Congressman Raul Ruiz is a doctor and doesn't like that approach.
We must completely fund efforts to protect American families from Zika. The American people deserve no less.
On Tuesday, the Senate cleared the way for expected approval by the chamber today of $1.1 billion to fight the mosquito-borne Zika virus, which has been linked to birth defects. Many conservative Republicans in the House refused to approve Zika funds that would add to federal budget deficits, while Democrats and some Senate Republicans favor treating the problem as an emergency that would not have to be financed with spending cuts. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Court in the search is on for an Egypt Air plane that disappeared early today while flying from Paris to Cairo with 66 people aboard. Egyptian and Greek aviation officials say the plane crashed in the Mediterranean, but so far searchers have not located it. The Airbus A320 had 30 Egyptians and 15 French nationals on board. It's not yet clear what happened to the plane. Lawmakers in the House could vote as soon as next week on legislation to help financially troubled Puerto Rico. A revised bill was introduced last night that would create a control board to help manage the U.S. territory's financial obligations and oversee some debt restructuring. Puerto Rico is $70 billion in debt and faces defaulting on a $2 billion debt payment on July 1st. Fewer students would receive free and reduced price meals at school under legislation that Republicans have pushed through a House committee. The bill would scale back the number of schools in which all students receive free or reduced price meals. Boxing great Manny Pacquiao has won a seat in the Philippine Senate, bringing him closer to a possible crack at the presidency. The 37-year-old Filipino slugger earlier this year said he planned to retire from boxing to become a full-time politician. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has apologized in Parliament after he rushed across the floor to hurry one legislator to a seat, was accused of elbowing another in the chest, and got into a shouting match with an opposition leader. The incident was an unusual outburst in the normally staid Canadian Parliament and a rare loss of control by the 44-year-old Trudeau, who has enjoyed high ratings in the polls and international fame. And a letter written by Christopher Columbus in 1493 has been returned to its rightful resting place in Italy, ending a years-long investigation into its theft. The rare missive, in which the Italian explorer describes his voyage to the Americas, was tracked down several years ago in the Library of Congress. The letter was stolen from a library in Florence, and after being bought by a book dealer, it eventually ended up in the hands of someone who donated it to the Library of Congress. U.S. officials turned it over to Italy yesterday.
How about that? It was stolen, then wound up in the Library of Congress?
Yes. This happens more than you think, I think, with some of these antiquities and things around the world that get pilfered and end up somewhere else.
Huh. Well, as we learned studying Italian in college, Cristoforo Colombo.
And Firenze Library.
Very good. Yeah. I like it. 23 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you're looking to take your business to the top, turn to the state that's doing the same, Michigan. Learn more at michiganbusiness.org. Does being a blogger seem like a dream job to you? Blogger, general practice physician, CEO, and teacher were voted the best jobs in a new CareerCast opinion poll. In addition, a couple of those jobs also made the list of the worst ones. Details from Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast. Kyle, what do we have?
What we found out was pretty interesting. We got nearly 400 responses. Many of whom identified themselves as 18 to 35, so in that millennial demographic. So we had quite a number of young people just weighing in on what they thought the best jobs were, worst jobs, some of their potential dream jobs, and what kind of factors they weighed in determining what a great job was and what a not-so-great job was.
All right, and what was interesting to me is that teacher made both the best and worst jobs on
the
list.
Yeah, teacher was an interesting one because another one that appeared primarily on best as well as heavily on the worst was doctor. So you're talking about two very noble professions, but both have their challenges, very different challenges for each. With physician, you're obviously in charge of the lives of other people, very high stress. Teachers high stress as well, but for different reasons. That's one that I think that landed on worst because of the typically low pay. But I think that people see that impact of being able to help others' lives, and that's why physician and teacher is one that appears on the best jobs list. But the reasons for it appearing on the worst as well, I think, are pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. All right. So what were the other jobs that we would want to have?
Well, CEO is one that people seemed pretty high on, which is understandable when you consider that the number one reason that people deem a job best, according to our survey, was high pay. So you figure if you're making in that six-figure range on average, that's going to be very appealing. So that was one that appeared on the best as well. And then data scientist was one that people, which was a new one in terms of the jobs rated in 2015. This year in 2016 was actually our number one rated job. I think it's interesting that the readers really did respond pretty well to that. That's a very burgeoning field. You know, I think it's still kind of taking off in terms of the potential of it. So obviously our readers seem to agree.
Very good. We're speaking with Kyle Kensing, online content editor at careercast.com. We're talking about the jobs we want the most and the least. All right, so what else jumped out? Say, maybe go to the worst jobs list.
Yeah, the worst jobs, something like pest control worker was one that had appeared several times in the worst jobs, which is obviously something that, you know, we all need. It's one of those things you don't think about until you need it, but when you need it, you do desperately. They're invaluable, but that's a job that people don't want.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's a top 10 pro-business state, where 2,000 burdensome and unnecessary regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years, and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate? All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Hey, glad you're with us on this Thursday, May 19th. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Egypt Air Flight 804 has vanished over the Mediterranean. Zika funding approved by the House. Fed officials are open to an interest rate hike next month. LinkedIn says hackers were trying to sell 117 million email addresses and passwords from a 2012 breach. Hillary took in $1.5 million for six speeches last year. Fashion model Bella Hadid's dress at the Cannes Film Festival. Underwear optional, apparently. And more people revealing political wishes through obituaries. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by Staples. Staples has low prices on everything you need to promote your business, from business cards, brochures, and banners, to pens, magnets, and calendars. Trust Staples for low prices every day. Staples, make more happen. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg hosted about a dozen prominent conservatives to discuss accusations by the tech news site Gizmodo that liberal stories are intentionally promoted in its trending topics section. Meanwhile, what if the social media site had a button that allowed you to see stories with opposite viewpoints? It's an idea from Wall Street Journal personal technology columnist Jeffrey Fowler, who says if Facebook is part of the problem, it can also be part of the solution. Jeff, explain the scenario.
That's not even the biggest problem Facebook has. They have an invisible hand on the news that nearly a majority of Americans now use to learn about what's going on in the world, and they haven't been talking about it for a long time. And that's the news feed. That's the thing you get on the homepage of Facebook.com and on your mobile app. That news feed is the place where 40% of Americans now get political news, particularly actually focused on the liberal side of the equation. And that news feed is just like that trending news list at the top. It's a product of humans. It's an algorithm that's developed by humans to try to give you things that Facebook thinks will get you to spend more time on Facebook. But along the ways, it's making choices about what news you see. And there's a lot of concern, and I agree with this concern, that it's causing a kind of echo chamber where since the news feed just wants to show you things that you want to see, you don't really get exposed as much as you should or you used to with the old newsstand to opposing viewpoints, to the other side of the political equation, or even just different sets of facts.
Mm. All right. It doesn't have to be this way, though, right?
It doesn't. So one of my colleagues here at the Journal developed a very interesting experiment. So he has made something that you'll never actually see on Facebook itself. It's a version of Facebook where there is a conservative feed and there is a liberal feed, and they're sitting right side by side. And if you go to WSJ.com, you can see these, and you can get an experience where basically it's a news feed algorithm like you have on your Facebook that is, instead of being attuned to just show you what it thinks you would like to already know, it's tuned to show you opposing viewpoints. And I think that is something that Facebook really ought to start bringing to the rest of us in its real product.
Wow. We're speaking with Jeffrey Fowler, Wall Street Journal personal technology columnist. His piece is called "What If Facebook Gave Us an Opposing Viewpoints Button?" You know, it's funny. I don't know if it means I'm old or uninformed that I never go to Facebook for news. I want to see, you know, how my high school friends are doing, how their kids are doing, and whether or not my specific neighborhood Facebook page, you know, a neighbor needs help or there's a suspicious white van with no windows driving around. You know what I mean?
Sure, and that's certainly where Facebook started, but it has changed a lot in the last couple of years, especially as Facebook has sort of shifted its business model. And now Facebook is explicitly going after news organizations, and they have something called instant articles that even the Wall Street Journal is using to publish news directly into the Facebook stream, which means that Facebook really wants more and more us to spend our time on its site and us to use it as our primary place where we go to get information about the world. Yes, some of that's about friends, but others of that is about, you know, what's going on with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and transgender rights and the Zika virus and all these other things that are in the news. And if they're going to be that place, they need to make products that give us the power to control what we see and to diversify our points of view. And the way they've got it set up right now, it's really, really hard to control. I've got a couple of tips for it in my column. You can do a few things to tweak that news feed, but not nearly enough.
Thanks, Jeff. Wall Street Journal personal technology columnist Jeffrey Fowler. It's 21 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, some good news for students and teachers in San Antonio, as officials say no one will face punishment after video surfaced of high school students using a cat's intestines as a jump rope during a lesson. The incident reportedly happened earlier this month during an anatomy class at Winston Churchill High School. The school district said the teacher felt the lesson was effective for demonstrating how long and tough intestines are. A spokeswoman for the district says the lesson was not meant to be disrespectful. She says neither the students nor the teacher will be punished because there was no ill will. But she says the district will update the lesson plan for the future.
I see.
So that's good.
The jumping rope.
I can't even imagine that.
With
the
cat's intestines.
Yeah, and I never got a chance to actually to see the video, but I can't imagine stretching out something from a cat that's long enough to jump rope with. But again, so apparently it was an effective lesson,
yes,
but maybe upset some people who went and tattletailed and they got in trouble.
Well, it probably gave the phys ed teacher the day off because the kids were getting exercise
right
through bio class or whatever.
I mean, I remember dissecting, you know, frogs and that kind of thing tiny little parts, and I can't imagine something like this.
I just remember the smell of formaldehyde also.
Yes. You can lovely. I still remember that smell 20 some odd years later.
Still in your nose?
Yeah, for sure.
When you say that officials in the district in San Antonio will update the lesson plan, mm-hmm, I was thinking maybe next time instead of jump rope, they'll use the cat intestines as a lasso.
Sure.
Right? That'd perhaps be more reflective of, I don't know, the Texas environment?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe a little less disrespectful, perhaps.
I'll submit that, maybe.
And staying in Texas, Gordon, Rangers second baseman Rougned Odor might have to sit out eight games after punching the Blue Jays' Jose Bautista over the weekend, but that isn't stopping one of the team's minor league affiliates from trying to capitalize on one of the biggest moments in the baseball season so far. Yahoo Sports reports that the Frisco Rough Riders are selling a new energy drink containing alcohol called Rogie's Red Punch. It's a blend of fruit punch, an energy drink, and a secret ingredient from Odor's native Venezuela. And it's sold out of a punch bowl, of course. It cost $5.15, $5.15, which was the date Odor punched Bautista after having his hard slide into second base. Odor had a connection with the team. He played for the AA Rough Riders during parts of the 2013 and 2014 seasons.
How about that?
I'm wondering what that secret ingredient is.
Yeah.
That's a little sketchy.
Do you need your ID to purchase it?
I would think. There's alcohol involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, right. It's an alcoholic drink.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We just don't know what the secret ingredient is.
No, right. Yeah. We don't know the secret. Yeah, the secret ingredient is not alcohol, as far as we know. That's out there. We know that's in. Huh. But the secret ingredient from Venezuela, that could be almost anything.
Very good. If we didn't have, by the way, marketers at the minor league baseball level, we wouldn't have these spectacular stories.
Yeah.
These are some of the most creative minds out there, right? Don't you think?
You got to be.
They can take any current event.
You got to be. When you come people to watch a three-hour baseball game with players they never heard of, you've got to be creative.
My daughter went to a Trenton Thunder game yesterday as part of her annual sixth-grade class trip.
Always a good time there.
Right. I said, how was it? Boring. I said, okay. Very good. Baseball just is not something
not
we do.
Not for everybody.
Not in my house. Thank you, Mike. 14 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Here's to the innovators and job creators. Dell is proud to support small businesses everywhere with reliable, award-winning technology powered by Intel Core processors, created to give your business 4 times faster performance and cut downtime by 50%. During Small Business Month, enjoy 35% off select business PCs, plus always get free shipping and advice from Dell's dedicated experts. Visit Dell.com/radio to discover how we can help you do your best work. Intel inside, powerful solution outside.
Thanks for being with us. On the health front, there's new research on colon cancer. Turns out your odds of survival may depend on which side of your colon the tumor develops. In a study of more than 1,000 men and women with colon cancer that had spread, those whose tumor was on the left side survived just over 33 months, while those whose tumor was on the right side survived only slightly more than 19 months. The findings were released yesterday during a preview of some research to be presented next month at the American Society of Clinical Oncology annual meeting in Chicago. 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, a French surveillance jet is joining the search for an Egypt Air plane that's apparently crashed in the Mediterranean Sea. Egypt Air Flight 804 was carrying 66 people from Paris to Cairo when it disappeared early this morning. Egypt's prime minister says there was no distress call, but there was a signal from the plane. House Republicans have passed a $622 million bill to battle the Zika virus, setting up a battle with the Senate and White House, which want much more money. Congresswoman Nidia Velazquez of New York is from Puerto Rico.
Anyone in this chamber said that this is political. Not, it's not political. When we have people that are dying in Puerto Rico.
The House vote broke mostly along party lines. Director Tom Frieden of the CDC says it's just not enough. The Republican-led House has voted to approve a $602 billion defense policy bill after rejecting attempts by Democrats to close a detention facility at Guantanamo Bay and to repeal the war powers President Obama relies on to fight ISIS. The legislation calls for the purchase of more weapons and prohibits further cuts in troop levels. Jurors will resume deliberations today in a civil trial over the 2012 Colorado movie theater shooting that left 12 people dead. The jury is considering whether the company that owns the theater should have foreseen the risk for violence during the packed midnight premiere of a Batman movie and taken precautions to prevent the attack. Cinemark's attorney says there's no way the company could have predicted such an attack. California's easing its drought restrictions thanks to a wet winter that eased the 5-year drought in some parts of the state. The new approach lifts a statewide conservation order enacted last year that requires at least a 20% savings. Now, hundreds of local water districts will be allowed to set their own conservation goals. And in the latest example of if you're going to do something stupid, don't post it on social media, a criminal complaint has been filed by park rangers in Yellowstone against a group of men who posted pictures and videos while walking onto a sensitive hot spring. They also violated park policy by dipping their hands into the water that can reach the boiling point.
rules just don't apply to somebody.
Nope.
Right?
And take pictures of it.
Yeah. Nice going.
Aren't we great?
Yeah. That's right. Don't mind us. Rules don't apply. I love Yellowstone. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Some people are literally taking their politics to the grave, as the Associated Press reports obituaries published during the past several months have included commentary from both sides of the political spectrum. Last week in Alabama, relatives of Catherine Michelle Hines published an obituary that included, quote, in lieu of flowers, do not vote for Donald Trump. Hines' mother, Susan, said she never talked to her daughter about the anti-Trump message, but knows she would like it. Just before dying earlier this month, Carl Crosetti of Staunton, Massachusetts, told his companion he wanted Donald Trump to be president. The Enterprise of Brockton, Mass. Reported his family tried to honor that wish by wrapping up his obituary with the request that, quote, people elect not to vote for Hillary Clinton. The obituary of Marianne Alfred Noland of Richmond, Virginia, published Monday, reads, quote, faced with the prospect of voting for either Trump or Clinton, Marianne chose instead to pass into the eternal love of God. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Let's take a moment to share a message from our sponsor, Google. You might be surprised how many people are looking for your business on Google every day, not necessarily by name, but by the products or services that your business offers. When people are searching for these things, it means they're interested in them, and that's exactly when your business should be there. The good news is it's easy to make that happen. Just run an ad on Google. You don't have to be a marketing genius either. Creating an ad takes just a few minutes. Head on over to g.co/GordonDeal to learn more. There's even a special offer waiting for you. That's g.co/GordonDeal.